Welcome into Locked On Grizzlies podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mark King. The Grizzlies had an awesome game on the weekend. The Grizzlies had a terrible game on the weekend. We'll talk about that in the first and second segment of the show. And of course, we'll do the Monday mailbag in the third segment of today's show. All that and more on Locked On Grizzlies.
Pull up, jump shot. It's good. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the show today, a Monday show. Fantastic weekend for the Grizzlies. Well, not all fantastic, but the Grizzlies had a fantastic game on Friday night. We'll talk about that game in the first segment. We'll talk about the game against the Nuggets in the second segment. Of course, we'll do the Monday mailbag segment of the show. In the last segment of the show, like we do every single Monday, so make sure you get those questions in throughout the week. I will answer them as best I can, and we will talk about that every single Monday at the end of the show. Make sure you go and subscribe to the show, whatever podcast platform that you use, and Spotify, Stitcher, any of those type of things, so you don't miss this episode every single day. The Grizzlies had a great game on Friday. It was a game in which Mike Conley came back and was given a video tribute, and it was just really cool to see Mike Conley back. It was really cool to see him talk about his time with the Grizzlies, and even better yet, you know, seeing a guy like Mike Conley go up against a guy like Ja Morant in what is, you know, going to be the passing of the torch from the past point guard to the future point guard. It's very cool. The video tribute was very, very good. I thought that Mike Conley really enjoyed it. He was holding back some tears, so I thought the video trip was really good. So shout out to Michael Blevins and Eric Honeycutt and all those, the guys in the video team. I know all those guys, and they do a great job with the video content for the Grizzlies. So shout out to those guys. It was wonderful. I loved it. I thought it was awesome. Tony Allen was out in the crowd on Friday night watching Ja Morant play, and Ja Morant, man, he just does things that people just don't do. I mean, the kid just does so many wild passes and so many wild dribbles. I mean, his handles are insane. Like, I don't know if there's going to be a game, even on the Sunday night game, I don't know if there's going to be a game this year, maybe very far and few in between, where we go, where we were not amazed. And it was excellent. You just saw so many people talking about the Grizzlies and talking about Ja Morant, just not in our little bubble in Memphis, but everywhere. So cool to see that. And that's what Ja Morant brings to this franchise, is that he is now, you see, you know, you get all kinds of notifications now on your phone with ESPN and CBS and all these big networks without articles about Ja Morant, about the Grizzlies, which is fantastic. So believe it or not, you know, the days of us being mad about not having nationally televised games, I think those games are coming, or those days are coming to an end very, very quickly with Ja Morant here in the Memphis. So don't be surprised, even if they get flexed out to some nationally televised games later in the year. If they have some, you know, the ESPN and national TV networks have the ability to flex in games that didn't have originally scheduled. So don't be surprised if that's what happens with the Grizzlies, honestly, at all. Like, that's what Ja Morant does. That's the effect that he has. And he was sensational last Friday night. He was 9 for 22, which, again, not terribly efficient, but like, if you look on the other side of things, and Donovan Mitchell was 9 for 21, and you say, okay, that's fine, I'll take Donovan Mitchell, my best player on my team, shooting 21 times. And kind of the same thing with Ja Morant. Like, when I first saw that, like, I thought, oh, not the greatest efficiency in the world, but that, you'll take that. Like, your best player on the team shooting 22 times, I will take that all day long. He was, had a couple threes, which was good. You know, again, you want to have a couple threes, or at least be able to shoot that ball at least effectively every once in a while just to have that threat. I think that's what makes will make John Morant even better. Once he's if he can consistently hit outside shots, man, there's not a whole lot you can do to stop him. I mean, he was 8 assists. He had only 2 turnovers, 4 rebounds, a steal, and 25 points. And I thought he was amazing. He just did so many things as well. Kyle Anderson was also really, really good. He was 6 for 9, ended up being 1 for 2 from 3, 13 points, 7 rebounds. At one point, he had 11 points, 5 rebounds, and just 7 minutes. Like, it was insane. Kyle Anderson, he came out and played really, really well against the Utah Jazz. I thought that was one of the better games we've seen from Kyle Anderson. Again, don't need a lot of points from Kyle. You really don't, but you need him to be effective when he's out there with the ball in his hands, and I thought he was able to do that. He had 7 rebounds. He had a couple assists. He was getting the rebound and immediately going up the court. I thought that was great. I didn't think Jonas Valanciunas had a fantastic game. I thought he was average. Dylan Brooks had 20 points, 7 for 15. I thought he was good. You know, there are still times when Dylan Brooks gets tunnel vision, and there are times when he just doesn't see the court like he needs to, or doesn't play within the offense like he needs to. So, you know, you'll probably take that with Dylan Brooks, because he's going to score some points that you maybe thought you weren't going to have from someone. So, again, I thought he was good. I thought he was effective when he was out there, but there were times when I thought that he got a little bit Dylan Brooks-ish, if you will, like we've been talking about on the show. But nonetheless, Dylan Brooks, 7 for 15. I thought he was good in this game. 20 points, did a lot of things really, really well. Jaren Jackson Jr., I think he was kind of an afterthought. He was 0 for 6 from 3, only 4 for 13 from the field, 9 points. I didn't think he played incredibly well, but, you know, Rudy Gobert is a tough matchup, and he was playing against Rudy Gobert a lot of times throughout that game. Brandon Clark, also another just efficient game, 5 for 7, 10 points, 4 rebounds, just really, really good, and only 18 minutes. I mean, I thought that was really good, and also to note, John Morant had 31 minutes. I mean, that's something to say about, you know, kind of the resting talk and conversation that we've had in the past, is that, yes, we, you know, John Morant, you gotta pick some spots. And I thought this was an effective game to push John Morant. If he had to go out there and be out there for 32 minutes or 33 minutes, you know, there was a point in the game where you had that thing to lock it up and win it. You needed John Morant out there to do that for you. I mean, it just, man, there was that one play, though, where he was dribbling and he went behind the back going left to right, and then go from behind the back while he's dribbling in a fast break and then into a scoop shot, which is just like, that's crazy. Like it really is crazy, and it is amazing. And you could just hear the whole, because that shot kind of bobbled and kind of bounced around the rim and then finally dropped, and you can just see everybody just kind of go and then wait for it to drop and then just go crazy. That was an amazing play by Ja Morant, and just at the end, just that killer instinct. I mean, I think there was one point, I don't remember who he took off the dribble, maybe it was Emmanuel Mudiay. Maybe that was him. He took him right off the dribble. The game, they're not tall enough. I mean, just giving him all kinds of beef. Man, I love that about Ja Morant. The killer instinct that this kid has is amazing. And Taylor Jenkins even said it after the game, that he kind of has a humble confidence about him, that he knows where he's at in the league, but he also understands that he's good enough to beat these guys. And I thought that was really, really good. Now, on the other side, like, they played hustle defense. They didn't play excellent defense. They didn't play lockdown defense. But I will say, the past 3 games, in those wins that they have played, their defense has been much better. Still some different schemes than I thought would be less effective against guards, but they have been much better in the past 3, in those 3 wins. Now, on the flip side of that, the Jazz just missed a lot of shots. I mean, honestly, like, they just missed a lot of shots that they would normally, I feel, would make. And a lot of open shots, a lot of shots that you think that they would be able to make. And so, you know, you put a lot of that stuff out there that they missed, and maybe it's a different story. Again, you know, I thought the Grizzlies played well. I don't want to take anything away from the Grizzlies and what they're doing. At 56 points in the paint, like, the average, I believe it's 56 or 58.4 is what they average. The leading points in that paint team. And that starts with the big starts with John Morant. I mean, they were able to get into the lane really, really well and been really effective all year. So 56 points in the paint. So you'll be looking to that every game. Like, what is their points in the paint? Because that is where they are the best at. And so what can they do to get those points in the paint up? And so I think that's going to be something you kind of look at it every single game, what they're able to do against those particular teams. But yeah, you know, if the Jazz hit some shots, they're open. Maybe it's a different story. You know, Solomon Hill played good defense on that last possession against the Utah Jazz. Was it a foul? I don't think so. I couldn't really see it in real time. Even after watching it as a replay, still probably doesn't look like a foul for the last 2 minute report from that they put out officially from the league. It didn't list it as a correct non-call, so you can debate that all you want, but the Grizzlies still get the win no matter what. Coming up next, we will talk about this the loss against Denver, and in the last segment of the show, we will talk about the Monday mailbag segment. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the show. Again, as good as the Grizzlies were against the Jazz, they were equally as terrible against the Denver Nuggets. It looks like a team that's played a lot of games and a lot of nights just didn't have it. I mean, this game was over before the second half even started. I believe it was like 72 to 40 something at the halftime. The Grizzlies had a 17 point quarter in the second quarter. You look at the points in the paint, they only had 40 points in the paint, just a 16 turnovers for 25 Denver points. That tells the story a lot, really, right there. I mean, it's just defensively, they were just not there. They were not good at all. Jamal Murray had an excellent game, 39 points, 14 from 24, 7 for 12 from three-point range. I mean, the perimeter defense is something that they've really struggled with all year long, and it's no difference. And so there's not a whole lot to say about this game. That nobody played well, you know, besides maybe Jaren Jackson Jr. But even then, like, it just wasn't enough. He was 6 for 12, 5 for 3, 5 for 7 from 3, which you love to see. I mean, keep taking the three-point shots. They're clearly falling for him. 22 points for Jaren Jackson Jr. But yeah, just not good all around. Just team defense was just awful. So you got a lot of mop-up time from D'Anthony Melton, Bruno Caboclo, Solomon Hill, Marco Guderich. Also, by the way, Marco Guderich has not been good the last couple of games, and I can't wait until we realize that Marco Guderich is not a shooter on the move. He's just not. He is a standstill catch and shoot guy. And hopefully, whenever we realize that and put him in the corner or put him in areas where Ja can or Tyus can get him the ball standing still, he's much more effective than off the dribble. He's just not good off the dribble. And so hopefully you get him in those certain, you know, get him in the spots that he needs to be in. I think he can be a more effective player for you on the team. But right now, it's not been good. As you know, a couple of good games throughout the season for him, but just overall not great. And that doesn't mean that he's not great altogether. That is, you know, an analysis of what he's done the past few games. I know, like, people always say it's always one game and always one stretch and don't overreact, but, that's what we're here to do. We're here to talk about the games. We're here to talk about the analytics of what has happened over the few games, and that's the truth. It's just not been good. Again, 17-point quarter for the Grizzlies in the second quarter, 34-point. You know, other than that, like, really terrible quarter, it wasn't, like, all bad. I mean, they outscored the Nuggets in the fourth quarter, 23-34. So, you know, not all bad. I mean, that fourth quarter is largely scrub time, so it's kind of hard to say one way or the other what was good about that. You know, what I thought was interesting is that Malik Beasley didn't get a lot of time, like, even in mop-up duty. I just thought that was weird that he's not getting the time. I know they're committed to Jamal Murray. They're not committed to Malik Beasley, which I tweeted this the other night, but it's true. The Grizzlies need to find a way to go hard at Malik Beasley for a trade, not for acquisition offseason, because, you know, if you can find a way to get him in season, I think, you know, you obviously have much more flexibility in what you're able to do in the offseason. You'll have his bird rights, so you will have the right to match anything that another team throws out there, so you can keep him for whatever you want. If someone maxes him, you can max him. Someone, you know, let him go, see what he can get. If someone gives him less than max, then you save some money. So I think the Grizzlies really need to try hard to go after a trade in season for, you know, Malik Beasley. Even if it's not Malik Beasley, if it's another restricted free agent, you know, Malik Beasley is probably the top one they're going to be able to actually be able to get. This is why you see a lot of people talk about him, because he's actually, I think, a gettable asset versus someone like Buddy Hield, who I never thought was gettable at all. I always thought the Kings were going to give him what he wanted. And so whether it's Malik Beasley or someone else, the Grizzlies really need to go after a trade that will solidify what they're able to do in the offseason for that particular player. They're able to, you know, get exactly what they want or match exactly what they want. They'll have the bird rights. They'll be in control versus going in the offseason and just throwing darts and seeing what you can get, where you really don't know what you're able to do. And I think you have enough pieces in this Grizzlies team right now with maybe Andre Iguodala or, you know, other pieces. Even Dylan Brooks. I mean, I would love to be able to have a Malik Beasley and move Dylan Brooks back to the bench, where I think Dylan Brooks can be better, especially against other backup shooting guards. But I think you have enough assets with this Grizzlies team. I think you could pull something like that off and still be okay long-term. So I think it would behoove the Grizzlies to really go out and do that. But coming up next, we're going to talk about the Monday mailbag segment. We'll talk about all your questions you sent in throughout the weekend. Welcome back to the show. Again, the Monday mailbag portion of the show where we answer all your questions from the previous week. Kind of had a few of the questions this week, so we'll try to get to them as many as possible. First one is up from Grizz at Grizz Tony on Twitter. How long before we see Josh Jackson in a Grizz uniform? You know, to be honest with you, I think it's going to be a little bit. I had this conversation with a friend of mine the other day, is that the problem right now is that they're playing pretty well, you know, and Solomon Hill's and Jay Crowder, and that's kind of the position you would see him at, is to the coaching staff. I think they think it's going fine, and so there's no real reason to rush it. I think that's probably the biggest issue. I for one think that you should give Solomon Hill's minutes to Josh Jackson right now and just be done with it. I don't know. Now, there are obviously things that that the internal front office staff wants to see from Josh Jackson, something that we're not privy to, as we kind of noted earlier in the season. There are obviously things that he has to do to get back to where they want him to be. We don't know what those are, but he clearly hasn't met them yet, or maybe he has, and they just, again, from the coach's staff point of view, there's not a whole lot of urgency, because, you know, they just won three games in a row. Everything seems to be okay. You know, to be honest with you, like that was last night's blowout. I have expected to see a lot more of those this far into the season than we have. It's only been one or two of those, and I thought we'd see a lot more than we have. And so that's probably also the reasons that they're competing on most nights. They may be losing, but they're still competing. And so I think that's probably what it boils down to, is if you have flipped those three wins into three losses and you're still you're staring at a five or six game or seven game losing streak, then maybe that changes things, and maybe it changes the way that people view it. But for right now, I think they're just okay. And Sarah, so I think this is just what it is. I think that it'll probably be a few more weeks, and I think you probably have to see the team kind of go on a downturn, unfortunately, for that to happen. Brandon Collins is from @Steve Jail. I'm sorry if I messed that up. Brandon Clark's been immensely better when paired with the only true center on the roster compared to when the Grizz are playing small. Should they change the rotations to get more time with BC and JV together? Obviously, Brandon Clark and Jonas Valanciunas. I'd probably leave it the way it is. You know, like I like Jonas Valanciunas. He's a great player, but I think that, you know, Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson, you're going to have to learn how to play together. Like, they're the future of this franchise, is what it is. And so you need those guys to play together and play together really, really well. Not to mention, most teams have a small lineup these days. I mean, it's uncommon to see true centers, especially in the rotations that Brandon Clark's getting in the backup kind of rotations. It's less likely to see a true center than it is to see an athletic center or, you know, really kind of small guys. So, you know, it's gonna be effective for them to continue to play Brandon together with those athletic bigs. Again, I'm not a fan of playing like Brandon Clark and Kyle Anderson together, making Brandon the five, or Brandon Clark and Bruno Caboclo together, or anything like that. I think I've made that pretty clear. I don't think that's a good idea. But as far as just getting more time with Brandon and Jonas together, I'm not sure that that's I'm not sure it's going to impact him one way or the other. If anything, I'd want him to have more time with Jaren Jackson Jr., just because that is the future of the franchise. But Brandon Clark's been great. Like, Brandon Clark has been, he's good. Like, he's been, we haven't come on the show and talked about one game where Brandon Clark's been bad. He's been effective. I mean, he is one of the most effective players in the league, not just as a rookie, but in the league. He is very, very good. If you go check out Peter Edmondson's Twitter feed, he's got a bunch of stats on Brandon Clark's efficiency, I think last night or today. And like, it's been really impressive numbers. Brandon Clark is very, very good at basketball, and I'm not sure if it matters, honestly, who he's paired with. But, you know, that just, you know, the reason you see him better with the center is because it kind of draws the bigger center away from what Brandon Clark's trying to do, kind of gives him that floater, gives him a little bit more room to operate. But again, I think long-term, your best bet is to make sure you have something with Jaren Jackson Jr. and not just with Jonas Valanciunas. Question from Seth Baldy at Baldy Senior. Is Andre Iguodala able to play for Memphis and get paid, especially in light of the league forcing the Pelicans to play Anthony Davis last year when he requested to be traded, and even Memphis was required to play Chandler Parsons was healthy and away from the team? Why do neither of these scenarios apply to Andre Iguodala from the league's perspective? You know what? That's a great question, and there really is no good answer for that. As much as I'd love to answer it, for the league's point of view, it's a mutual agreement between the player and the team. And so what you saw with Chandler Parsons last year is that Chandler Parsons wanted to play. So Chandler Parsons is the one, and his agent is the one that went to the league and said, hey, we want to play, but the team won't let us. And so that's the difference between, as far as Memphis is concerned, with Chandler Parsons and Andre, is that Chandler is the one that went to the league. I mean, this is not common. I mean, I don't know if this is common knowledge or not, but Chandler Parsons is the one that went to the league and said, I want to play. They're not letting me, but I'm healthy. And that's what forced the Grizzlies' hand with the league. Now, if Chandler Parsons had never said, hey, I want to play, they're not letting me, I don't think you'd have seen that situation in Memphis. It would have been perfectly reasonable for them to keep on operating the way they were, and both sides mutually agreed to just say, hey, we're just going to figure out a solution, we're going to trade him or whatever. Because you see it happen quite a bit, that players just, you know, maybe not play. Again, it's a mutual kind of agreement between Andre Iguodala and the Grizzlies that they're going to work out a trade. They're going to work out, you know, he's not staying here at all, he's never going to come here. They're going to work out some situation where Andre Iguodala can move on. He doesn't want to play. That's first and foremost. Andre doesn't want to be here, like, period. So at the end of the day, why force someone to play, or why force someone to be here when they don't want to be here? And it's only going to take away from what you're trying to do as a team. Like, I don't want Andre Iguodala coming in here and taking away Josh Jackson's minutes or Brandon Clark's minutes or Tyus Jones' minutes for that. I mean, he's not going to take time. I'm just saying, like, giving you examples. Like, do you really want Andre Iguodala coming in here and taking away the minutes of the guys that you need to see play, someone like a Josh Jackson? You need to see him play to make a decision on what you want to do with Josh Jackson. Do you really want Andre Iguodala coming in here when you know for certain that he is not going to be here the rest of the year? You don't want that. And so it's perfectly reasonable and perfectly fine for the league and the Grizzlies and Andre Iguodala all to be okay with Andre hanging out in LA and waiting for December the 15th to roll around. This question is from Joe Utes. Appreciate the question, Joe. This is not his first time, so I appreciate the listen. Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja haven't developed a great offensive chemistry yet. What do you think Taylor Jenkins can do to facilitate this growth? You know, this is a pretty easy question, I think, for me to answer. It's simple as put them in a row together. I mean, you haven't seen that a lot this year with Jaren being the role man and Ja being the pick, or Ja being the screener. So, like, you just haven't seen that quite often at all. And I think that's pretty simple. It's just put them in the pick and roll together. Force the action. And so I think that the more you put those two guys together in the action, the better they will become at playing together. Now, you haven't seen them a lot of times have games where Jaren and Ja are both playing or both have really good stat lines. But you need, I mean, you've seen Ja be great. You've seen Jaren be great. And those games, you've had to have those guys to do the things they were going to do to win the game. And so I think it's just going to be patience and time for those guys to have games where they're always, you know, not always, you're not always going to be great together. That's the point, though, I'm trying to make, is that there are going to be games where Ja's good and there'll be games where Jaren's good and things like that. And so that's going to be okay because that's going to happen throughout their time. We saw it with Mark and Mike. I mean, sometimes when Mark was good, sometimes when Zeebo was the man, sometimes when Mike Conley was the man, sometimes when Tony Allen is killing on defense. I mean, so there's just a lot of factors that go into that. But the main crux of the answer is just put them in the pick and roll more. I think that's something that hasn't happened a lot. I think that's something that Taylor Jenkins can improve upon, is forcing the action between the two players to get them involved more together. Because I think that does a lot for this team with the way they're playing. That does a lot for this team with the players they are and how you have to defend that. Now, the reason I think they're doing it the way they're doing it is because you have someone like Ja Morant and Jonas in the same game together, and you put them in the pick and roll, and you put Jaren, who can actually make threes, off out on the perimeter where he is a outlet pass. However, once the set starts to happen, and he can either break his defender down or shoot the three. So I think that's why they're doing it like they're doing it, is they're trying to utilize Jonas because he's a better role man than Jaren might be, or better role man when Jaren's in the game, because Jaren can take pressure off the defense, because you can't. It's hard to collapse upon Jonas Valanciunas when he's rolling to the basket if you have Jaren Jackson Jr. standing right next to you, who can also hit the three. So there's a lot there that I think they're trying to do, but the simple answer is just to put them more in the pick and roll together. If you didn't hear your question answered, I'm sorry. I didn't have time to get to every one of them, but I appreciate all the questions. If you have a question, please make sure you send it in for a Monday mailbag edition every single week. You can send them in throughout the week, and I'll get to them on Monday, but you can send them in all week long or on Sunday when I put out a tweet to respond to that tweet with the question you have. Make sure you go and subscribe to the show on whatever podcast platform you choose so you don't miss an episode every single day. I appreciate you guys listening. We'll be back tomorrow with Amari Sankofa from The Athletic.